everything I do kind of feel like an imposter, because I come in from the side for a while, grab everything I can, and then move on. And so I don't feel like the typical path you take, starting at the bottom of working up. I'm like, I'm coming in. Hello, bye.
Hello, friends. Joining me today is somebody that shares so many interests with me, it's actually a little bit scary to talk to him. He's the writer of one of my favourite tech newsletters available now, Overkill. Please welcome to the podcast, Kevin Vama. I feel like, Kevin, that I haven't been following you for very long. I don't know how long you've been on Twitter and doing all this stuff for ages, but I feel like you and I are cut from like a very similar cloth, even though obviously yours being an extremely younger and better looking version of the cloth.
Thank you.
Just with all of the stuff that you kind of get up to and the interest and stuff that you can, and even a bit of the kind of like interest butterfly in me kind of flits between bits and pieces. But I've tried to kind of frame everything when I talk to people as, you know, like conversations with people that you might not know. And you're one of those people that I didn't know for a long time, and I wish I'd stumbled across earlier because of, you know, like everything that you do. Is it something that you've always kind of been passionate about? Is it built over time, or are you just kind of mashing everything together on the internet?
I believe that, well, some interests have always been there. So everything which is like gaming and tech, it's always been an interest of mine. That's, I think I've played my first video game. Oh, well, played. I held my first controller in hand and pretend played at, I think, age 3 something.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like, I'm 30 now, so 27 years ago. And tech, I came into tech also very young, always wanted to work in technology and want to be a developer. Thought I need math. I sucked at math. Turned out you didn't need as much math. But in the end, I went into the other direction and went into journalism.
Okay.
And the other interests, I have a thing where I have an interest for something for a certain time. So I'm interested in any topic, and then I go very deep, and then I see if I still care. And if I do, I kind of try to combine every other topics where I did the same thing. I have my current fascination is a bit, which is really, really random compared to everything else I've did so far. It's restoration. So not restoration. That's what you call it in French. The restaurants. So running a restaurant, something like that.
Okay.
This is something I currently am looking into. If this is something I would like to do, could do, would be interested in doing.
Okay, yeah.
So this is something. And I mean, the last one has been, if you've been following the newsletter, one of the newsletters I have is also planning some hiking, so going more into hiking. So basically what I do is I see something. I always say I copy a lot of what I see. So I see something and then go deep, and then somehow that remains in the back of my head, and I combine it with the rest I've seen so far and I've experienced so far.
I kind of get the inability to describe it as well, because I always say to people, and there's certain things that I've had to avoid because I know that I will just go completely and get obsessed with it for at least a period of time. And there's certain things that I've had to avoid because I know that they would cost me serious money to get like involved with. But I don't know what it is. I think I've just got this really addictive personality where I see something and kind of go, oh, that's kind of cool. And then it just spirals from there.
Yeah, I feel the same thing. I'm looking at my keyboards. I have mechanical keyboards, and this is like one of the areas where I was like, I'm really into this, but I need to stop myself, because otherwise I will just buy 300 euros worth of keycaps for two keyboards, and then I have like a room full of keycaps. Like, I know some people who do. They are really into that, but I'm like, I need to stop. I need to stop before I start.
Yes.
And I feel like that's, yeah, it's, there are different things like that where I say if I would just go all in, I would probably be broke.
Yeah, I haven't done it with mechanical keyboards, but everyone's like, you know,
stay away.
I had a brief conversation with Matt Birchler about it, and he was trying to not sell it to me, but he's just into that kind of world. But you know, it's things like people say to me about, you'd get on better with so and so if you played golf, and I'm like, no chance, no way, no. That's like thousands of pounds that I might as well set fire to. You know, like I got obsessed with like cycling for a bit, and now into photography, although photography's lasted years, so I can't really take into that. But I really get this kind of eclectic thing. But I think a lot of the things that appeal to me are kind of transferable. I think that's what you were saying, wasn't it? It's like you can plug things into other interests and go, ah, well, that's how it worked in X, so maybe it works like that in Y.
Yeah, I feel something like that. It's where you can say one experience I've got, how can I take that into something else? And then at the end of the day, write about it. This is always leads to some sort of writing.
Yeah.
Also, to give another interest of mine that lasted, the way I had to stop myself, I have like three typewriters behind myself.
Oh, okay.
And they are all restored. And if I would have continued, I would probably have like 10 of them. And then I've got a certain someone with whom I share my life just saying, you don't need any more.
Okay. No. Yeah, the expression is with bikes, the amount that you need is N plus one, with the amount that you have being N. Or I don't know what the letter is that they use, but basically it's one less than being divorced or broken up with is what you kind of should stick to. Is always floating around the other half. Thankfully, mine is very understanding in my obsessions, but I touched on this slightly with when I was talking to Kay about this kind of, I feel like we're both kind of, we want to be minimalists but can't because we have attachment to just certain stuff. And I hate using the word minimalist now because it just has, I don't know whether you've ever visited the like subreddit that's minimalism or whatever. And they talk about like only having 66 things, you know, like a complete obsessive compulsive stuff like that. But I'd really like to be minimalist, but I just can't because I've got this addiction like you have.
Yeah, I also looked at minimalism probably the same way and realized that I'm much more of a materialist and not going too crazy, not of the hoarding sort of way. But the part of minimalism that I mostly care about is the aesthetics. And so right. I've realized that after going into it, watching all the documentaries, reading all the books, doing the Marie Kondo at home, realized it doesn't actually spark joy to get rid of things, except if I realize I have no need of them. So I'm not still hoarding stuff because I feel like I might one day use it in the end of the day. If that's the case, I just say I'll rent it or someone probably has it and can give it to me. But I've also realized that while I love like aesthetics of clean screen, clean desktop, not a lot of stuff on there, I have like three screens in front of me. And I would probably want a fourth one. And that's like the opposite of minimalism, but it's just like in the end of the day, there's this minimalism works if it works for you, but in the end, it didn't work for me. Also, I haven't been in a long time in this subreddit because of things like that. I only have 66 things. You have 67 things. I'm better than you.
Yeah.
So dropped out of that subreddit in the end.
Yes. Yeah. I watched the documentary, you know, like got involved with the podcast with the two guys on there that names escape me, read all the books, you know, got all that sort of stuff in and then kind of started actually thinking about stuff. But the road it led me down, I think, is probably a bit like you, is I realized that I value better quality stuff than loads of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I'm sure I'll get some hate from this, but it's like Apple products is just a bit, they're more expensive and they just appeal to me a bit better. Although clearly when we've tried to work today on a MacBook, don't necessarily do what you want them to do.
Yeah, that's true. That I feel that's the same thing for me and just like very deep into the Apple ecosystem. And it's also how I personally started getting into blogging because back in the days, it's not as I'm very, very old, but back when I was a teen, I started a German tech blog. and it was mostly focused on Apple because that's just what I cared about the most back then.
Mm-hmm.
And there somehow this, if it's a bit cringy, this love for the company came, just grew while reporting and while covering it for the blog. And in the end of the day, you also buy an experience when buying an Apple product. And this is the experience I personally prefer compared to, I don't know, an Android phone or a Windows PC, mm-hmm. even though I have a Windows PC, but it's for gaming. So
I have noticed that you're completely hardcore into your gaming. Most of the tweets that you put out don't really make sense to me. So I'm still trying to frantically avoid, again, getting really deep into gaming, although Daryl Baxter tries to get me into. I did actually buy an Xbox just before Christmas, you know, to play like Forza and FIFA and all that sort of stuff. But PCs and stuff scare the hell out of me because, again, that's like another money pool, isn't it? Trying to play games.
Yes. Yes. Especially currently because of the whole chip shortage. So even you overpay for different things. But it's also, first of all, just getting the hardware mm-hmm. will be expensive. But then there are sales constantly on like Steam. They're like, oh, maybe I'll play that game. Or maybe I'll get that game one day. And then never you touch it again. That's like, this is why I can't be a minimalist, because at least I'm a digital holder considering for video games. But I think my library is something about mostly also from sales, like 800 games. I think I played like 10% of them.
Yeah.
Though a lot of them I have to say for my own, not before people tell me I'm crazy. A lot of them were bought in bundles where I was interested about in one game, but they gave you $15. So this is how it grew very, very quickly to that amount, that huge number.
Yes. Yeah, I've heard that quite a lot from Steam. It's the fact that you log on and then there's a game on sale for like ridiculous price, you know, like a few pounds or whatever it is. Because you're from Luxembourg, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, we
pay in euros.
like a few euros, you pick up a game and then there's another game that's another couple of euros and you just never play them and never go back to them and just don't bother.
Exactly.
But at least you've got plenty to play on when the Steam Deck finally arrives. I don't want to get like you to rant straight at me like straight away, but it's on the way, surely.
It's on the way. It's pre-ordered. I'm in Q2. So every Monday they're currently sending out a batch of emails, and today was the last email of Q1. And when you buy it, you have like 3 days when you get the email. So basically it was a pre-order with a mm-hmm. money deposit of like €5.
Yeah, it was
dollars,
nothing, wasn't
remember.
It? Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm in Q2. And so starting next week, every Monday, I will probably frantically refreshing my inbox to see, have I gotten it? Am I one of them? I got to admit that the Steam Deck has me excited incredibly, even though I can't really put my finger on why. There's not like, it's not filling a need I had. Like I had, it's, mm-hmm. it's more like they showed me something that I needed before I knew I needed. Like the having the whole PC gaming experience on the couch or mm-hmm. when you're on your way, when you're traveling. And I have a Switch that gets me far, but then there's still games that I can't play. And this is
a lot
kind
of
something that I'm really, really, really into, or at least interested in. And then I hope that as soon as I get it, that it's what I expected. Otherwise,
yes,
yeah, with another money deposit for something that I in the end didn't want or needed.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it actually feels like it's an exciting bit of tech. You know, like the world of smartphones is stagnant. You know, we've had a little bit of excitement, I guess, over laptops and stuff like that, but there isn't. We're not moving forward at great strides. And although the Steam Deck doesn't feel like a massive stride forward, it is really in terms of what you can do with it, isn't it? It, like you're saying, like PC gaming on the go.
Yes, and also according to the few YouTube videos I've seen so far, it's also very good quality. So it's not a subpar version of the video game quality that you are used to on PC. So it's still not, you don't play at 4K 60 ultra settings, but you can have these games that you love that are not on other platforms. You can have them and you can play on the couch on a held-hand device, which also is a full-fledged PC. So in the end, you can take it to work and then just boot into desktop mode.
Pretend
and
you're
work
actually
on,
working, yeah.
Exactly. And then when someone watches, you just alt-tab into Linux. And when nobody's watching, you're just back into the game. Not that I am doing that. That's not a plan I've been having. Somebody's listening from work.
That is absolutely going to happen to a lot of people, isn't it? I'm presuming you can just put like Windows on it or whatever, can you?
Yes, that's possible. And it's running Linux from out of box.
Right.
So
yeah,
you can just stay on Linux or install Windows.
I've always wondered, and this is a bit out there, really, and nothing to do with what we're talking about. I can't work out why Microsoft haven't put, you know, like some kind of desktop operating system on the Xbox. You know, like we have my son's got an Xbox, and I'll have to buy him when he goes to secondary school, you know, like a laptop or a computer or something like that, purely just to do homework. You know what I mean? Like, it would absolutely clean up if the Xbox could just, you know, like have Word and Excel and stuff on it, and you could plug in a keyboard and stuff like that. Does that sound bonkers?
Not really, because the thing is, it runs some version of Windows, so it's already halfway there. They just need to allow the other half to make it happen.
Yeah.
Then is that in their interest? In the interest? That I don't know.
No, probably not. No, it's like the Apple thing, isn't it? Why don't they make an iPad that does this? Because they want you to buy a laptop. That's why.
Exactly. Why doesn't this MacBook have a touchscreen? Because there's an iPad.
Yes, because they have to fulfill their quota for whatever version quarter thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
You work in all that kind of data analysis stuff, though, don't you? On a, like a day-to-day job?
Yes, so I have basically multiple personalities regarding work and the things I do. So I work at a newspaper. I'm not a journalist anymore because I didn't like work. Writing for newspaper, so the actual physical thing made out of paper.
Right.
I'm always much more digital. And so I switched into marketing, and then in marketing, after a while, I said, hey, I want to try something new. And then I came into data analysis, mainly because I wanted to learn how to write some Python. And now I am currently the only data analyst that the company has. And so I'm also working... Yeah, I'm also working on data. Though I often feel like some kind of imposter because I just learned that during a couple of months because I wanted to. And now compared to all colleagues we have at different companies, I'm like, I don't know what they are talking about.
I feel that like that constantly. I mean, I was like a salesman basically, and I've fallen into, you know, like a bit of web development and marketing and print work and all that sort of stuff. And like I've been doing it for 3 or 4 years now, but I just constantly feel like I don't have the skills or the background to fulfill that. And it's actually quite nice to hear that somebody else feels like that. You just kind of fall into these weird things that I suppose just come up, don't they?
Yeah, that's also, I kind of feel like the thing you said before, that this is, since we are interested in so many different things at different periods of our lives, that I feel like I was really into writing, at least journalism, the journalistic type of writing. Then I fell out of love with it. Then I went into marketing. I did that for a couple of years. Then I started something else in marketing, did it for a couple of years. And now I'm at the point where I'm saying, huh, maybe I want something, do something new. And yes. I have that like every 2 to 3 years where I say, okay, right, I want to get a new skill, try to do something else, going to a bit of a different direction, but keeping everything that I've learned so far as in the background, and then base the things I do on what I've learned so far. So to give an example, by going to the whole cycle of journalism school and having a mentor telling me how to write, I kind of learned communication. I learned how to communicate. And that is very practical for marketing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And then in marketing, you learn how to. In marketing, I learned how to do campaigns. I was more on the marketing. Well, marketing is a huge field, but I was more like on the conversion type of marketing.
Right. Yep.
And there, I learned how to do numbers and how to actually look at numbers and statistics. And then I started learning data analysis, which is even a step further.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole way I am still, which is the reason, I guess, why my boss wanted me into his team, is because I started as a journalist. I kind of know how journalists think.
Right.
Which my colleagues in the marketing department don't. And, or at least didn't back then. And so that's also an advantage. So basically taking every piece of puzzle, collecting over the years, and then starting to put them together. which also has its disadvantages. If I were to look for another job, I wouldn't know what to apply for. I don't feel like I have that title, like I'm this type of guy, because I don't know. I am a little this, a little that, a little here, a little off there. And then at the end of the day, so I'm a mix of all of it. And then when you look at job descriptions, it's like, we are looking for data analyst who did this for 10 years, or we're looking at a digital marketer who did exactly this for 10 years. And I'm like, I did a bit of everything, but not that.
Yeah, I guess on the flip side of that, if we were to broaden that out, I guess that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, like life experience really is kind of bringing all these things together, isn't it? I wrote a post quite a few years ago because I kept getting asked, you know, like you go to events and stuff like that and they'd be like, oh, who, like, what do you do? That's like one of the first questions that people ask you, you know, isn't it? It's like, what's your job? Like, what's your job title? And people get really ingrained in, like, I am this person. Like, your job then becomes part of your personality, doesn't it? And I guess the good thing, if I can roll it back into what you and I were both agreeing on, is that that doesn't apply to us, really. If we can kind of take the imposter syndrome out of it a little bit, at least we've got a bit more broad-ranging kind of things. I can't imagine just doing a job for like 10 years. That's your job. That's what you do for 10 years. Day to day, nothing else.
I'd be bored. I would not burn out, but bore out. Probably,
yeah.
Just doing the same thing every time for I don't know how long, which is also why when I'm not working, I have this blogger hat that I'm wearing. So you know, I kind of change it on the offside. And I started doing blogs. I'm trying to get even again more into photography because it's always something I wanted to do.
Yes, because I'm very jealous of your Leica camera.
A lot of people are. I feel. This is, again, the imposter syndrome jumps in. Like, I got this camera and people talk to me, oh, is this like a Q2? How is it? Do you love it? I'm like, yes, but I only know how to use like 10% of the camera.
Yes.
And I guess that's it. And then I'm again like, and again, the imposter syndrome. I kind of feel like that's like the overarching thing of my life is everything I do kind of feel like an imposter because I come in from the side for a while.
Yeah.
Grab everything I can and then move on. And so I don't feel like the typical path you take starting at the bottom of working up. I'm like, I'm coming in. Hello. Bye.
I was reading a post, I think it might have been on Reddit the other day, about imposter syndrome, and this guy had changed it in his head. So he was just like, I'm just the world's greatest bullshitter. This is my talent now. Like, I've stopped worrying about that someone's going to realize it, and I've just gone, I am an imposter. You know, like, I've bullshitted my way into this thing. Deal with it. Do you know what I mean? And that's it.
Yeah.
And I guess it'll be a glorious way to deal with everything.
Also, I feel like the thing is with an imposter syndrome is that probably all the people that you think might think you're an imposter are probably too busy thinking of themselves as imposters.
Yes.
So in the end, no one really cares. So it's mostly just a thing we have with ourselves. We are just fighting in our own heads. About I'm an imposter, somebody will find out. They won't, because they are too busy thinking the exact same thing, that they are imposters and somebody will find out.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? The amount of thought that you put into worrying about everybody else, and then, well, not you're not worrying about everybody else is doing. You're worrying about everybody else, worrying about what you're doing. That's like three levels. But you eventually get to a stage where you just realize that just no one gives a shit. That they're too busy worrying about themselves to worry about what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, there's also a great Marcus Aurelius tweet. Tweet, not a tweet. No, he did not
Marcus
tweet.
Marcus Aurelius tweeted?
A quote where he says, it never ceases to amaze me. We all love ourselves more than other people, but care more about their opinion than our own.
Yes. Yeah.
And I feel like that really works into this. Also, I have a Marcus Aurelius tattoo, so this is like one of the two philosophies I try to follow.
I was going to ask about the like stoicism thing. I'm like a baby stoic, you know, like I kind of get where stuff is coming from, and I'm trying to get more involved with or trying to take on more stuff. It's just very hard to there's like a membrane you have to like force through in Stoicism. There's just kind of like about three or four people that you kind of, I feel like you have to know them in depth. And once you're through and you're in it, I think stuff just will probably make more sense. It's just from the outside looking in, it can be quite imposing, I guess, because it's so ancient, but also obviously applies to today.
Yeah, it's that's the thing. So just to open up a parenthesis, I have on my left arm Marcus Aurelius, my right arm Buddha. But that's basically the two philosophies when I feel like I am in need of something philosophical, that's why I go to look for ideas.
Both not entirely from different places either.
Yeah. The thing with Stoicism is when the first time I came to it, nowadays, it's very modern right now. It's very popular right now.
Yes,
I believe that's also due to some authors. Yeah, Ryan Holiday, who is pushing it a lot. And it's also getting very big, I feel, in like American sports.
Okay.
I haven't heard about European sports yet. And like you said, there are basically three to four people you should look at if you want to go into Stoicism, which is Epictetus, Marcus Aurelius, Seneca. These are probably the big two.
Yeah.
And then I forgot the first name, but something Rufus. And it's beautifully written. I love reading, so it's beautifully written, but I kind of find it sometimes difficult to bring it to the modern day, to the modern, like, where can I apply what he just said about busy Roman life in my not so busy Luxembourgish life?
Yes.
And there I feel like people like Ryan Holiday stepping in, or some other authors currently focusing on Stoicism, where you say, just looking at them, and they do the work for you.
Yeah, they almost do the digesting for you, don't they?
Yeah.
And then say, we can look at this way. I don't really have time to do the Daily Stoic every day, but when I do, I enjoy there's always something that I can kind of go, huh, that was kind of bothering me like 2 or 3 days ago, and there's a solution to that.
Which reminds me, I forgot to read it today. So, it's also what I feel like with all these things, all the different philosophies or other knowledge that I find throughout the days and weeks and months, is that they are not very present in my head. I'm not like constantly thinking, how would Marcus Aurelius react? How would blah, blah, blah react? But more like, I'm in this situation, something is bothering me. What can I do? And then somehow they flare up. They're like, okay, there is this thing. And I might not even say, okay, I have this from Stoicism, or I have this from Buddhism, or I have this because I've read a book about I don't know what. But it's just like they came up, and then I kind of make it my own version. And then it's when I try to apply it to my life. And I kind of also often feel that the ideas I put out there, sometimes on the blog or on tweets or whatever, are kind of stolen, just that I don't remember what the source are, what the source is, because it just went through my head, it worked, and then there it is.
Yeah, a lot of kind of blogging is just kind of regurgitating stuff, isn't it? And I feel like that sometimes, that I've heard it somewhere before, you know, like in a roundabout way. But I think that it's important that people are bringing stuff too, and they do, you know, like kind of put their own twist on things. And quite a lot of your posts seem to be coming from important places that, you know, like, does something kind of happen in your life and you kind of think, oh, that's a good blog post to write about? Or is it just you kind of sit down to write and then something comes to mind?
I guess it's probably a bit of both. What I try to do is, when I currently I'm a bit on a hiatus, how do you call it, on the break on that blog, because I'm focusing on the other blog.
Yes.
But the way I've been doing it is, usually I just sit down on Sundays and then just go, okay, what ideas do I have? And then I just like throw up all the ideas I have in a note file. And then over the weeks or over the days, I'll say, okay, maybe this is something I want to write about. This is currently very present in my life, or there's something, I've read something, something somewhere else that kind of reminds me of that. But I believe a lot of the things I usually have is really just what I digest by reading or consuming other stuff. But we look at YouTube videos where I just have like a random thought that comes up, and I'm like, hey, maybe there's something I'd like to write about. mostly, I feel like lately, it's mostly when I read some book. I had one, the George Saunders, what's it called? A Swim by the Pond in the Sea or something. A Swim in the Sea by the, in this pond by the sea, this way around, or In the Rain. I don't remember the full title. And while reading that, I was like, he was analyzing seven Russian authors, so seven Russian versions of seven Russian stories, and he analyzes them and tells the reader why it works, why it's good. And every time I was reading one of his analyses, I had like, hey, this is something I want to write about. This is an idea, mm-hmm. or something came over, or fully fledged, at least at the moment, good sounding sentences. And these I just then write down and then create a tweet about them, a tweet out of it, or a blog post, or I just keep it in my stash in Obsidian, where I have way too much stuff that I never look at.
Yes. Also, snap on one using as well, trying to use Obsidian in what I see on every YouTube video, and two, just getting overwhelmed and barely wanting to open it because there's so many things that I've highlighted and gone, I should write about this, and just not done it. I feel like most of my inspiration for blog posts comes from reading, and I always say to people that reading is the best form of like being a better writer, because you get inspiration on things, and a lot of things, it's just like a tiny little thread where I'm just like, that would be a cool thing to write on. Most stuff doesn't even get to the blog. Do you know what I mean? It'll get 100 words down the line and I'll just be going, I don't really know where this is going, but it was good for me to write it out and kind of process that thought.
Yeah. This is also why I'm journaling a lot throughout the day, because I feel like at least getting the idea out of there, and then maybe someday it will just play up again and I have, okay, now I have more to say about it. I have more opinion, or I can actually bring something to the table that I haven't seen before. I haven't seen before in that way. Yeah, I feel like this also happens a lot to me.
I've just bought that George Saunders book, by the way. I was just like, okay. £5 on Amazon. Click, buy. Yeah, Swim in the Pond in the Rain.
Yes, that's the problem with Amazon. Since I've had a Kindle, I have more books now in digital than in paper form, even though I personally like a lot of paper. I love paper. You see me on webcam, so you see my library behind me.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, there's a new book. Someone's mentioned somewhere a book that I might be interested in, and then I'll first put into my wish list and then say, okay, I only have 10 more books, 10 more unread books on my Kindle. That's not good. I need to have more, otherwise I will run out of books, things to read, and I'm said, I need to buy all the books. And at least that way, nobody can say, hey, you are hoarding books.
Yes.
So because they stunt
absolutely
the
yeah, I love paper books. One, I don't really know what to do with them after I've read them. Yes, there are some books that hang around, you know, like I've got a really good copy of the Bhagavad Gita that I must have read, you know, like 20 times now, and books like that that I will always buy in paper. But two, I think if I bought all the books that I had on my Kindle that I haven't read, I would just be like drowning in an unused library. And just, yeah. I think I would feel bad, especially for the planet.
Yes, probably. Also, I have books like that behind me that I haven't touched yet. And where I'm at the point now, the thing what I really like about the Kindle is, and what really works probably for all of us writers, is that when you highlight something, you can just do something with the highlights. They are synchronized to somewhere. You can then synchronize them. I don't know. I synchronize them to Readwise, and from Readwise, I synchronize to Obsidian. Yep. And from there, you can say, hey, this is something that I want to maybe quote somewhere. And the more I do that, the more I read on the Kindle, the more I feel like it's not the better experience. I don't feel like a Kindle is a better experience to a paper book, because I am that nerdy and saying I like the way paper feels and paper smells and the fonts they use and whatever typesetting they do. And then I'm always sad when they don't care. But on the other hand, just like reading on the Kindle, it's has advantages that a book can't have, like synchronizing highlights, or just being able to go quickly back, or just look up words. That's like the one thing I do a lot, which is look up a word, because I have, well, English is probably the fifth language I learned.
I was going to say, you will be speaking German and probably have to learn French, and also speak a bit of English and stuff as well. Yeah,
and I'm half Italian, so I speak Italian. And then in like, it's just in school wise, English is the last language we learn. So there are still words where I'm like, what? And then that's very practical with a Kindle where you just kind of, okay, like, let me look that up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of dislike liking the Kindle so much.
Yeah, I don't want to deal with Amazon, if I'm honest. If I had a choice, I would not buy books from Amazon just because of, you know, like the business. But weirdly, the Kindle is the most open of the e-readers. I don't understand how everybody else just doesn't do it, because I feel like I get more out of a Kindle book because I can do all that highlighting and it can sync, you know, like anywhere. You like, you can put it in Readwise and then it could go to 20 different places if you want to. And at least I feel like I won't then forget it.
Yeah.
Because I think that's dead easy to do, isn't it? You go like, oh, that's an interesting point. Fall asleep. Then it's just lost to the ether.
Yeah, that's something I've had a lot with paper books at the beginning, where I just like underline a passage or I'll just look at it and say, hey, it's something I want to remember, but then don't remember it. For a while, I then sat down like on weekends or once a month and then just wrote them down by hand on a little cards.
Yeah, okay.
And I just like, that takes way too much time, and yeah. I'll never look at them because it's not searchable. So it's just like, I have a box. I still have them. I have a box of paper cards, and I'm like, hey, there's this one quote who said that. This guy, what book was that? I don't remember. And then you start looking, yeah. And then I'm looking through 200 cards, and then, okay, I can't find it. I don't care anymore. So this is also where then the Kindle has an advantage again. At least not the Kindle, but the synchronizing part of it.
Yeah, you can use the Readwise app. I've used it a couple of times, you know, to like scan the text. But I mean, who wants to do that? You know, it takes far too much time in the middle of reading a book. Because you consume what is honestly an ungodly amount of books. How do you do that? Every month when you used to put your updates on the blog, it was like 5, 6, 7 books you'd polished off.
I read all the time. I think that my hack is that I just read all the time. I realized that I really stopped watching any kind of TV shows.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Because I just, when I have to choose between, shall I watch like the latest season or the new season of The Book of Boba, the Star Wars show, mm-hmm. or read a book, I tend to go towards the book. And it's just a reflex I've built up over not even that long ago. I think in the beginning of the COVID era, it was a bit different. I was start binge watching everything I could just find.
Yes.
And then I got more and more into books and said, hey, let's try to read books again, even though I was reading books. And now it's just like, basically I have my Kindle on me all the time, no matter where I go. Mm-hmm. And then when I don't have something to do, I just check the Kindle.
Instead of scrolling through Twitter, which is what I would probably be doing.
Which I also still do. Yeah. But probably less, and then just read a book. Quickly, some pages, and no, that's not true. Not some pages. I always have for my inner OCD to read a chapter. I can't just break up in the middle of a page. I can't do that. So I'm always like, okay, I have to take a train. Come on, come, come on, come on, come on. And I start speech reading and jumping over things, which is probably also not the best way to go. But yeah, I'm just constantly reading. I'm just reading all the time. And I'm a slow reader. I don't feel like I'm a very fast reader. But just because of the amount of times, because of the amount of hours I read, it's just how I get to 7, 8 books a month.
Yeah, yeah. We can't go any further without talking about our joint love of the Midnight Library.
Yes. Every time somebody tells me they bought the book, and I'm like, did you cry at the end? That's always my one good question. Because this book is the first book of all the books I've read where I had at least some tears in my eyes, and absolutely love this book. And it's also, with coming back to the beginning of our conversation, love that book, bought all the other books at once that Matt Haig wrote.
Yeah.
So it's again that type of deep dive into this guy.
Yeah, it's one of the books that I can genuinely say, I mean, I went into it not really knowing anything. I don't even know where it was recommended on. It would have been, you know, like a podcast, or somebody would have said about it, or it would have come up on recommended reading. And, you know, like you read the blurb, you just go, yeah, that's cool. And it's one, honestly, it was like a 2-3 o'clock in the morning sleep, because I just couldn't put it down. And when I got to the end, I was genuinely sad that I'd finished it, because it was just brilliant.
Yeah. Yes, that's like the type of book where you at the end are just like, give me some more. I want some more. And then again, you don't really want to, because then it would just be, it wouldn't be as perfect as mm-hmm. I think it, this book is. But yeah, same. I think I've read that in one sitting, if I remember correctly, because it's, I just didn't want to stop.
Yeah, I went out and bought a copy for my wife. Anybody that says to me about books, I'm like, the Midnight Library. Just go and get the Midnight Library. And they're like, what it's about? I'm like, no, you don't want to know. Just read it. And just go into it with it, like, completely blank and just read it, because I don't know anybody that doesn't love it.
Yeah, exactly. Same.
I haven't been into Matthew Haig. Are any of the other books that he's written worth reading?
I've read a few so far, because I read probably a bit too much nonfiction. So I'm always trying to put in one fiction book one while. I've read, what are they called? The Comfort Book by him.
Yeah.
Which I liked. It's mostly, there's a lot of Stoic influence in this. So if you are into Stoicism or want to get into Stoicism, this is a nice book to get into. Then there is Reasons to Stay Alive, which is mostly about his experience with suicidal depression. It's beautifully written, just that for me personally, I found it difficult to grasp because I never had that. So I never had that type of depression or suicidal depression. So I kind of tried to empathize and understand what he went through, but at the end of the day, I had a bit difficulty.
Like an outsider. To fully grasp. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then How to Stop Time, which is also a fantastic book. This is, again, the other two books are more like in this nonfiction type of groups of books. But How to Stop Time is another novel, is a fiction book, also fantastic.
Oh, right, okay.
But I won't tell you about what it's about, because you have to...
Again.
I can just give you a blurb, a short blurb. The protagonist is very old. But he ages much, much slower at a rate of 1 to 15, I think. So for every year that passes for him, his non-people with this condition age 15 years.
Oh, okay.
And that's then gives for very, very interesting, very interesting story.
This podcast has already cost me a reasonable amount of money.
I'm
bought that
sorry
book as well.
in a certain way, but not really.
Not that sorry. Not that sorry. Books to me are, I mean, my wife doesn't get it. I mean, she reads a little bit, but she doesn't really get it. I would just much rather pick my Kindle up and get it. But books to me shape my life and the world around me much more than anything else. I mean, computer games get a little bit close, you know, like that you can kind of take on the stories and stuff, but movies, TV shows just doesn't hit the same as a book. And I think it's because it allows your brain to just wander a little bit. You don't, you're not having things set out for you. The character can look however you want them to look in your brain.
Exactly. And I think then when you have like an adaptation of any sort of book and you see that it doesn't fit with your mental cinema that you create in your head, this character looks like that, this place looks like this, then you're always a bit disappointed. So sometimes I read a book, I don't know how to pronounce it correctly, Piranesi, something like that, which is a fantastic book. And the way the whole world is described makes me want to know what it would look like in a movie. That's like one of these few books where like, I actually want to see this. But I'm on the same boat than you. I would just say that the fact that reading is what creates my worldview,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think anything else gets even remotely close.
No. Do you take a lot into the books that you read as well? I generally, you know, like if there's no descriptors about characters and stuff, I generally presume, you know, they're all like white, British, and then something crops up and down the line and they're talking about like living in New York and it completely throws me off. But I generally kind of project a lot of what goes on around me into the books at the time.
I think I don't have that. I do it a bit differently. I don't really presume they are living in Luxembourg, because I always presume nobody lives in Luxembourg. But
how many people do live
in
Luxembourg?
650,000, I believe, more or less, give or take a few.
Okay. So that's like a bit of London, I guess. It's
probably like a town. In
actually, it's probably like a large town, yeah.
Yeah. And so mostly I just presume these people living in the UK or the United States, and then I'm always thrown off when I say, okay, this sounds like a very British book. And then I say, hey, it actually happens in the United States, or like all the way around, which I also try to have less, to have actually a wider worldview. But I guess in the end, we are shaped by our experiences. So
yeah,
that's what absolutely. We probably see.
And you've had some pretty wild experiences, really. I read a while ago you were talking about like psychedelics and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it was a weird story that you went to. The old frog venom.
The old frog venom. Yeah, the thing is, I've got nothing. We will talk some more about it. I've got nothing of this experience except compliments for the blog post I wrote. That's like the only thing that I got as a positive feedback. So I've always, like, I've been into meditation for a very, very long time, and I'm more like an on and off meditator. I don't meditate. I have periods where I meditate like daily for a couple of months, and then I have periods where I don't meditate at all for a couple of months. But I've always been interested in this feeling of enlightenment, whatever the hell it is, mm-hmm. because I do not know what it is. I've only read some books where people discuss about it, where they say, okay, you feel this and this, or you have this type of experience. I've never felt that. So I said, okay, I'd like to know what this is like. And then from listening to some podcast, Tim Ferriss and so on, that the shortcut is then to just try psychedelics. Yes. I've always been kind of interested in it, but a bit cautious, because I don't do drugs, I don't smoke, and so on. Like, but I'm still very open for them. So I still feel like they should be less criminalized and more legalized in different types of these substances. And so this possibility came to try this bufo, which is toad venom, and apparently when you inhale that and when you smoke that, you have like out of body experience. You have very vivid hallucinations, and I've got nothing of that. I was just lying there.
A bit of mild paralysis.
Yeah, I just felt a bit heavy. That's all I felt. And I have to admit, I came in already a bit skeptical, because I've been told, yeah, we are going to see a shaman. And I'm like, in Luxembourg? Okay. let's go. And then this guy was just standing there with his beard. I think he had a goatee. I don't really remember. A man bun. I'm like, okay, you're a very hipster type of shaman. And then started talking to us about all different kinds of stuff. We're like, okay, I'm just listening. I'm trying to be open-minded. And then he started to talk about the vaccine, the COVID vaccine.
Yes, I remember the post,
way crazy about that. I'm like, okay, I am blocking it off. I've been realizing I've been blocking it off. And then he gave us the substance, and the substance had absolutely no effect on me. Which, nowadays I wonder, was it because I just blocked it off? Was I too skeptical? Was I expecting too much? I think there's also a problem with meditation, where just like you expect to have this type of experience instead of just letting it go, just letting
definitely
happen to you. And I believe that might have been a reason why I didn't feel anything. Or the other theory I have is that there was no toad whatsoever involved into this experience at all, and was just like, I don't know, he was burning sage or something like that.
Yeah, very, very weird experience. I guess it's one of those things where let's try the experience and see if it works, but it obviously clearly didn't, and it was more like snake oil than toad venom.
And in the end, I feel like it was a thing to do just to know that I won't do it again, at least not with that guy. I'm still open for this, but I'm still open for trying out psychedelics and seeing where it can take me. I haven't taken anything since then, because the more heavy stuff scares me more. Because I kind of feel like an experience that can take up to a day, depending on what you take, that's scary. And I am not so sure if that's something I want to try currently. Maybe one day, but right now I'll stay on meditating every few months for a couple of days.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of podcasts and stuff that I listen to that, you know, that talk about DMT and those sorts of psychedelics to enlighten yourself and kind of take a peek behind the curtain, as they kind of taught it. And it's one thing that I'm very, very interested in. But like you say, it's one of those things where you need to really be sure that you would do that kind of thing. It's a quite a long-winded kind of process. And I suppose when you talk about like shamans and all that sort of thing, I mean, Aubrey Marcus talks quite a lot about, you know, like 2 or 3 days to prepare your mind to do sorts of things, and then a lot of time afterwards to process. And I'm just not entirely sure whether I can give that kind of determination into something. It'll be one of those things where I'm kind of interested in, but don't really want to jump in.
We'll see. Also, what normally with these types of things, you have a sitter. So somebody who is just experienced in it and who normally doesn't take the drug himself and just pays attention if something happens, knows how to react, when to give you water, if you need water, something like that. And I don't have people in my friend circle that are very experienced in that. So I feel like doing that with a stranger is also one more thing blocking me from actually going so far and doing this.
Yeah, you would probably have to move out of Luxembourg. Is it quite a boring country, I guess, is the right description? Is there a lot going on?
It's difficult to say because I feel it's probably much less is happening just because due to the size. It's a tiny country. There are not a lot of people living, and there's not a lot of experience coming from the outside, just inside, because mostly what people do here is they come and they come for work. So either we have people, the Luxembourgish people and the older people that live here who are like, they are living here, but they are all living a bit in their communities. And then I think we more or less have like 200 or 300,000. We basically reached 1 million every day during the work week, just because we have so many people commuting to Luxembourg from Germany, France and Belgium.
Right. Okay.
But they leave in the end of it. They leave in the evenings. So it's probably much more boring than some of my other favorite cities like Hamburg or Milan, where there's a lot of life happening around the city. But if you want to have a calm life, I guess Luxembourg is perfect for that.
Yeah, definitely. The only reason I say that is a friend of mine, Lucien, lives in Switzerland, and I can see a lot of parallels, you know, like French and German and kind of, although Switzerland's a bit bigger, but he always just says, it's okay, you know, like stuff happens a little bit, but because the populations are so small and, you know, like towns and villages even are so small, he struggles to kind of do a lot of things that he would really want to do.
And for us in Luxembourg, I feel like a lot of the things you want to do are centered around the capital, which is also called Luxembourg. And also work, the whole work life, basically all the big companies, and we have a lot of big companies here, mostly because it was for a very long time a tax haven. And it's all spinning around the capital, all around the city. But most people do not live in the city because, first of all, it's incredibly expensive. And second of all,
if it's a tax haven, it's going to be expensive.
Yeah. And second of all, you might not really want to live in the same place where you work as. Maybe you want some physical distance from that. But everything, whole life is around the city. And the while you just get tired of ever going to the same place. It's not like where you're in another country where you say, hey, I'm going to a different big city in like Great Britain, probably say when you're from London, you say you go to Liverpool or to Manchester, you go somewhere else just to experience something else. But there's still life. As soon as you leave Luxembourg City, everything is dead. Not dead, but much, much calmer. Also, you can do by car the country probably in 2 hours. So it's not a big trip. You're saying, I'm going to the north when you're from the south. You're just like, well, Luxembourgish people do it like it was this big thing they did, like this big road trip. But they are, 2 hours highway, and then you've arrived, you see some, well, if you go to the north, you see some green fields and cows, and then you go back.
I guess the most people will just go to a different country then, I guess.
That's something everybody does a lot, going to Germany, because you are, well, if you drive for a bit too far, you're in Germany. or you go to France. A lot of people go to Paris because I think by train you are in Paris in 3 hours.
Okay.
Then we have a lot of people going to Cologne, 2 hours of car to go to Cologne. So people travel a lot to other countries to experience.
Yeah.
To have more experience. At least my generation, so the younger people, 30s, so the millennials basically.
It makes me feel strange that you keep going on about all these experiences and stuff like that and you're only 30. It's crazy. I mean, I'm like properly old now, I think.
I don't know. I don't know if I had so many things or if I just had recently a lot of things at the same time. And so it just bunches everything together and it makes it sound like I've had this very exciting life. When in reality, I'm just sitting at home playing video games, reading books all the time.
Yeah, that sounds like the kind of life that I would enjoy, though. You've taken a backseat from kind of the kind of general blogging and gone back to tech stuff, though, recently. I've read a couple of editions of the newsletter.
Yeah, the thing with this is I still kind of, well, I still have multiple interests. And one blog is more like a lifestyle, philosophical mm-hmm. point of view. But I find it very difficult to write something for that. Because mostly when I write something, I either cringe because I feel like, who am I to write about this? And sometimes it's also very tiring. And then on the other hand, tech just comes to me much, much easier. And I feel like there is much more I can say to her, but on a more regular basis, which is why I've recreated this newsletter, which is basically every Saturday I send out the few most interesting or most exciting or most important news of technology and gaming. Currently, it's very gaming heavy, which is not on purpose. And then say, okay, why is this important? Why should you care? Why is this something you should look at? And I feel that writing these newsletters, so the newsletter is called Overkill, writing Overkill just comes easy to me. I just see the thing, I see the news, and I've already start forming things in my head, the blog post, the newsletter in my head.
Yeah.
And I kind of wonder if I'm going a bit lazy on that, because all the other rest, so the other blog, is much, much more complicated for me to write. I feel like I have to do way more work, and both mentally and actually writing and researching. So I'm probably just being lazy right now, currently in this period.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's not lazy. It's quite modular, the newsletter, isn't it? It's quite like you take all these kind of few blocks and then piece them all together. The thing with a blog post, I always feel like, is, you know, like, right, it's got to be at least 300 words, you know, like you've got to have a point to it, and it feels very personal to kind of put it all together and go, click, publish, it's there, it's on the internet, it's got my name next to it, like, you kind of stand by it, whereas a newsletter is a bit more, I think they're definitely easier to write. I did about 100 or so editions of, you know, like a more personal one, but it summed up. You can put two or three things in, just write 100 words on it and kind of get it out there, can't you? It feels like they're easier to put together and also a bit more like from the heart. You can put your kind of personal spin on it, can't you?
Yeah, you can. You feel like, I believe that is due to the form of the newsletter, because you have people signing up, and when they sign up, they are kind of showing interest in,
yes, I want to read this thing.
Yeah, either you or what you are writing. And if you are compared that to a blog, even if it's a personal blog, like the ones we have, it's a bit more public, it's a bit more out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see that for the one website, I am a bit more silly in my newsletter writing, because I feel like, okay, there are people on the other hand, on the other side, who at least kind of know that I'm a bit more silly and so try not to take myself too seriously. Then when I'm writing on the blog, I feel like there might just be someone coming from Google or from somewhere else. Yes. And who is this guy? And I feel like that is probably blocking me a bit too much, even though it shouldn't, mm-hmm. because it's just, in the end of the day, what's working better, the me being silly or the me being very, very serious and taking myself too seriously? I guess it's the being silly. So it's just like one of these blocking things, but I just say, okay, I have to get past that. But that's why I went for the Overkill newsletter, because that I feel like I can be a bit silly And I kind of trust myself to at least understand the tech and the gaming world much more than now the philosophical world or lifestyle world, whatever that means, that I can be silly and not just say something completely out there.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of things that typically get in the way of like a traditional blog post. And a lot of people get around it by just having like a more constant stream of kind of what they're up to and then bits and pieces thrown in. But I like the whole idea of a newsletter. I'm not doing one. I've said several times I'm not doing one. I've got enough with podcasts and God knows what going on at the minute. But it just feels like at least people are going, right, I want this thing in my email inbox every week. And it just feels a bit more like people letting you know that they want to read your stuff.
Yeah, it's a feedback loop that you probably don't have otherwise. If you have just a normal blog, even if you have analytics installed, any type of analytics, I feel just like seeing an actual name on the other hand, on the other side, or even getting a reply, just somebody just replying to the email you just sent out, feels much more fulfilling. You feel like you're not just screaming into a vacuum and just screaming into an empty room and with your opinions and nobody's listening, even though you might see some shadows if you look at analytics, some numbers popping up, but there's someone there. There's somebody there, and technically you can just become friends with them by just interacting, and then you know there is actually a physical human being, hopefully a human being, not too many bots on the other side, reading, listening.
Yeah, which feels intimate in a way that just a blog post doesn't. I mean, I've fell flat a few times in blog posts that I've written something that I'm really proud of, or, you know, like it's really kind of personal. Yes, you can look at analytics, but they're just numbers on a screen, aren't they? You can try and theorize what they mean, but at least people are reading your stuff and wanting to read your stuff. And I guess if they don't, they click on unsubscribe and then you feel bad.
Yeah, this is why, at least for the newsletter thing, one thing I swore myself not to do is not check subscription statuses, how many people have unsubscribed, because I just feel that it would be like, okay, what did I do? What did I say to have this person unsubscribe? So at least when you have like analytics, that's probably the opposite side of the coin. When you have analytics, there's you don't know who doesn't come back to read your thing. So probably that's the advantage again. But yeah, I swore myself to never look at this number, and which is also why I'm a bit disappointed that Ghost, which is the content management system I use, and I think you too, puts this very in front.
It's really built for people that want to be, I want to be able to brand and I want to do this and I want to charge for stuff. And yeah, it's really built like that. I really didn't like the Ghost 4 update. I mean, it's great in every other sense, but I really wish I could just get rid of all the graphs and God knows what else when you when you want to. But yeah, unfortunately, that's one of the downsides of Ghost. Everything else is great. Could be worse. Could go back to WordPress, but hey ho.
No, I've been at WordPress when I had like my full-time tech blog, my full-time German tech blog, and the whole 8 years that I was doing that blog, I've always been, is there something else? Is there some other content management system that I can please switch to?
Yeah,
I remember that I've been a Kickstarter backer of the Ghost Kickstarter back then when it came out, which is, I don't even remember how long ago that was. So shows that I've been interested in finding an alternative to WordPress for a very, very long time.
I was listening to Matt Mulweg, or however you pronounce his name, the CEO of WordPress, has been doing the rounds again. He was on Tim Ferriss, and then I think he was on Decoder, and he was doing all that sort of thing. And he's a really, really interesting guy. And I find it absolutely astonishing that WordPress just runs, what is it, like 46% of the web, or just as something absolutely crazy like that. And then I remember just how goddamn awful it is unless you spend just ridiculous amounts of money and have like a proper industrial server for like £1,000 a month.
Yeah, that's the one thing. I've multiple blogs over my life. Some that I just created because I was excited about an idea, then never wrote on them. and tried different things on self-hosting. And every time I spin up a WordPress blog, I've just got hidden by spam and basically got DDoSed on every server I started the first time until I set up all the different blockings.
Every time I set up that, is it Askret or Iskret or something that comes with the, if you, on the DigitalOcean thing? It's literally as soon as you put the website online, it's like, this IP address has been probing /admin. This IP address has been doing this. And you just, the whole time, I just don't feel safe.
Yeah, exactly. And this is also why I then switched to something else, which was had also its disadvantages, but had at least the advantage that I didn't have to pay for a ridiculous amount of server, for very big server at DigitalOcean, just because my website was constantly being hit by bots and whatever else, and spam. And
Android fanboys.
Android fanboys, yeah. Happy to be at Ghost. They should just take away this big number in your face, how many subscribers you have.
Yeah, I like dealing with Ghost in terms of just writing themes and stuff in handlebars. I mean, we've had conversations over Twitter and solved some issues. Yeah. You can usually get to the bottom of stuff, but trying to delve into PHP and stuff in WordPress just gives me a headache.
And I feel like my skills are a bit more on the lower end, at least at PHP. I don't even know how to read it, at least for HTML, CSS and stuff like that. I can at least read it, so I can try to figure out what's going wrong. But PHP, I just never bothered with it. Back when I was the blogger, I had like another guy who was just helping me out and said, deal with this, please. I don't want to. I just want to write and I want the things to work, which they did in like 80% of cases. And the rest, I just don't tell me.
Yeah, I don't even, half the time I don't even log into Ghost anymore, although I've been playing around with it a bit recently and I'm probably going to change it back again. But I just write stuff in Ulysses and click publish, and I like the way that it's just poof, gone, and I don't have to do anything.
I've always been a bit scared of that, of using an application and then just putting it straight to the blog via the application. I think I've been burned a few times back with WordPress, but probably nowadays it's just much easier to... Because I write everything in Ulysses. I create my little blocks of blocks.
Yes.
So my little blocks, CK of blocks, G, and then just put them together. And especially for the Overkill newsletter, where it's, well, like you said, it's just different blocks of content that I write and then see, okay, how do they fit? What do I think has to be higher, and then I push that to Overkill, but still look to Ghost, but still go in by hand, because to actually publish, I don't do anything else, just to hit publish. Because
the only thing is, like, stuff like Twitter embeds, bookmarks, stuff like that doesn't work. That's the most annoying thing. Which, yeah, you generally have a few tweets in yours, so I think stick to sticking it into the editor and doing it that way, because you have to copy and paste a few bits about and stuff. But it's if I miss stuff in the tech sphere, which happens quite a lot now, I'm trying to kind of take a backseat and not be such an opinionated asshole. I know that yours is going to come through and kind of at least sum up the important stuff and at least bring me up to speed. And it's been a pleasure talking to you for, an hour and a quarter now? About all sorts of random things and bits and pieces. I never like to put show notes together or, like we were saying, do intros and stuff like that, because I just prefer having a chat.
Yeah, and I feel that kind of works with what we talked about at the beginning, that we have all these different interests. So this podcast has all these different subjects and topics we talked about. So in the end, we did a circle.
Yes, hopefully. talked about most stuff that you're about. Obviously, you're pretty active on Twitter, although I didn't really understand that. I think you're retiring, aren't you, next...
I was very tired. I was thinking. So I basically just randomly said, I think I'm going to retire, because I was very, very tired today. And I wanted to send like a follow-up tweet to actually explain that, but was blasted with work today, so it didn't came around. I thought of deleting it because it was very, very random.
So you're not retiring from Twitter. That's good.
No, I'm not retiring. I'm not retiring from working. I'm not retiring. Not yet.
No. Yeah. But it's absolutely been a pleasure to speak to you. We got sorted eventually. Where can the few hundred people that listen to the podcast find you if they need to?
I think where I'm most active is probably on my two blogs and on Twitter. On Twitter, I go by twitter.com/cleofate, P-H-A-T-E, and Clio, C-L-I, so C-L-I-O-P-H-A-T-E. And then I have the overkill.wtf. I'm very proud of that domain name. yes. That's the tech blog, and then kvn.li is my personal random blog. So yeah, that's basically
both
where
very, I'm very worth signing up for.
Thank you.
But once again, thank you very much for joining me for a little bit of a rabble. It'll be a pleasure to have you back on anytime you've got anything to talk about.
Always. I always have something new to talk about. Probably, I guess you too.
Yes, definitely too. But I'll catch you later.
Okay.
Cheers.
Thanks. Bye.
And there we have it. That was an awesome chat, wasn't it? You can find Kevin online under his somewhat pseudonym, Cleofate. He's at Cleofate on Twitter, C-L-I-O-P-H-A-T-E. You can check out his Overkill blog with possibly the best URL ever, which is overkill.wtf. Until then, take the very best care of yourself, my friends. See you all soon.